Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is RCM Business Intelligence, Are You Tracking the One Key Metric to Know If You're Leaving Money on the Table? The presenters are Sarah Stewart, Vice President Revenue Cycle Services, Telker, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Darla Wanichk, Director of Customer Success, Telker, Lincoln, Nebraska.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Good morning, bright and early, and welcome to today's session, RCM Business Intelligence, Maximizing Revenue and Efficiency in Healthcare Operations. I'm Sarah Stewart. I'm the Vice President of Revenue Cycle Services for Telcor, which means I run our billing service team.
And I'm Darla Winitsky, Director of Customer Success at Telcor. I've been with the company for about 14 years.
9 years.
So, welcome, everyone. All right. Thank you for joining us today. And happy May Day. Does anybody know, did you do the little baskets when you were a kid and deliver them to your friends? That's what today's all about, right? Okay. So, managing the entire revenue cycle and the strength of that process is crucial in healthcare operations, ensuring financial stability and efficiency in revenue generation. While RCM vendors provide valuable data and various reports, focusing on the right key metrics is essential for revenue loss prevention. The reimbursement landscape is evolving rapidly, necessitating access to specific information for effective revenue cycle management. Are you receiving the right information at the right time? Are your analytics empowering you to manage your business effectively? Executives should not settle for subpar reporting and outdated methods like day delay reporting, batch reporting, right? So today we're going to delve into the importance of understanding key metrics and for billing team performance and revenue optimization. So let's get started.
So we've got a few learning objectives for today that we're going to take a look at to understand how payer requirements impact payer reimbursement, determine the effectiveness of our current processes, get insights into cost effectiveness of appeals, which is big, work on identifying new metrics for new labs, as well as discovering opportunities for existing labs, and understanding how productivity and reporting around productivity can really impact your overall success.
Okay, our first learning objective. Understand how payer requirements impact reimbursement. Payer requirements have a significant impact on revenue for laboratories, and it's crucial for labs to understand those requirements to ensure accurate billing and maximize revenue. Payers have specific coding and documentation requirements for billing claims. Labs must adhere to these requirements to avoid claim denials, rejections, or delays in payment. It's also important for laboratories to comply with payer coverage criteria. For example, some tests or services may require prior authorization from payers based on coverage policies. Failure to comply with those requirements can result in denied claims and revenue loss. And payers have specific formats, timelines, and submission requirements for billing those claims out. Timely claim submission reduces the risk of payment delays and improves cash flow. Okay, so hopefully we're getting the picture. Payer requirements definitely impact reimbursement. So, Sarah, what are the key metrics your team reviews to understand how payer requirements impact reimbursement for our laboratory customers?
Sure. So one of the biggest things we look at are the different types of denials that we have, and we track that through our advice analysis. So we have reporting in our system that allows us to pull in all of the remittance advice codes that we're getting and then add the data to that to be able to see by CPT code, by diagnosis, by payer, where are we seeing the highest volume of a certain advice code, and that lets us then start breaking it down, looking for those trends, looking for those patterns of, if UHC is giving me 97s on this test, is it because of a diagnosis code? Is it because of other tests that are being ordered along with it? What else is happening on those claims that's leading to that denial? so that I can tackle that and figure out a process to address it. Do I have a solution up front? Ideally, I can put rules in place up front to make sure I have the right diagnosis code, or I can stop the claim up front to get records to be able to submit with records if that's what we're going to need to show UHC why we did the test and prove to them that they should pay it. Or is it something where it's a venipuncture or it's a vitamin D test where you know the payer has very strict rules about when they're going to cover it, when they're not, and it's something that we just need to automate the adjustment. It's going to be paid rarely, and there's nothing our team can do to fix it, so we're going to make sure that that's adjusted off so that we're not spending our time touching that. We're moving on and touching the things where we can actually make a difference.
Perfect. Thanks, Sarah. So the one key metric to track for understanding payer requirements is?
Your advice analytics to know what advice codes you're getting and why.
Right. So denial analysis. Okay. Effectiveness of current processes. There are several ways to measure the success of current processes and identify areas for improvement. We just talked about one of them, denial analysis. There's also claim processing time, measuring the turnaround time from claim submission to payment receipt and identifying any processing delays. And there are also revenue cycle metrics such as days in AR, collection rates, and clean claim rates. But when it really comes down to it, determining the effectiveness of current processes and identifying areas for improvement, it's all about performing a root cause analysis. You want to identify the factors contributing to the process inefficiencies and therefore revenue leakage. Sarah, what data analytics do you use for gathering actionable insights for measuring the effectiveness of your team's processes?
So we use our touch rate as a high-level way to start getting at the things that Darla just talked about. So we look at how many claims we're having to touch on the back end to start to see where we're touching things and why we're touching things. And that touch rate, we take our total claim volume for the month and we divide it by the other way around. We take the errors and appeals for the month and we divide it by the total claim volume to get a percentage. So if you look at the graph here, it's one that I kind of mocked up based on some customers where we had toxicology customers that hit CCI edits last fall, where Medicare made a rule and then took a rule back, and then all the payers were somewhere in the middle. So we can track what's happening based on how many claims are erroring, how many claims are denying, and how many claims we have to touch. And we look at that for errors, we look at that for appeals, and we look at that overall. Also, as a billing service, since we have a multitude of customers, I'm able to look across our customers and say, based on their type, what sort of parameters they should be in. Toxicology has a different touch rate than clinical, which has a different touch rate than pathology, which has a different touch rate than genetic. But that allows us to see if our customers are in the right space, in the right percentages there, to understand if they're average or above or below, and then be able to dig in and see more of what is causing that variance. The goal is to be able to track when things are fluctuating and why, and use that to help get to your touch rate then by payer or by CPT to see where the changes are happening.
Perfect. Okay, so touch rate is the one key metric that helps you identify areas for improvement and a way to optimize your revenue. Hey, another biggie, this one, gain insights into appeals and their cost effectiveness. This is a big guy. Evaluating appeals based on cost success rates is crucial for maximizing return on investment. Not all appeals may be financially viable, especially if the cost of pursuing the appeal exceeds the potential reimbursement. Makes sense, right? So what are some strategies for prioritizing appeals? First off, analyze those success rates. And Sarah's going to talk about this in a minute, but you want to make sure to assess historical data to determine the success rates of different types of appeals. And then prioritize with appeals that have higher success rates to increase the likelihood of favorable outcomes. The next thing that we want to do is calculate the cost of the appeal. Estimate the costs associated with each appeal, including administrative expenses like printing, collating, faxing, postage, your legal fees, and then, of course, any time-related expenses. And then you got to take those costs into consideration when you're evaluating the financial impact of that appeal. The third consideration is to identify high-value appeals. Oops, my apologies. Let me go back. High-value appeals. You want to focus on appeals with significant impact on revenue, whether they be high-dollar claims or recurring billing issues. Keep that in mind. All righty. And then the next step is monitoring. You know, we always want to leverage data analytics to identify trends, patterns, and opportunities for optimizing appeal strategies. But most importantly, collaborate and communicate. Make sure you foster collaboration amongst your internal teams. That's your billing, your market access, and your legal counsel. You want to have all those groups working together, to streamline your appeals processes. Maintain open communication channels to discuss appeal strategies, prioritize cases, and share insights for continuous improvement. You know, the labs that I worked at, we actually had regular meetings where we talked about what's going on with all of our denials and how we were going to strategize to pursue those different groups of claims to go after those payers. And market access, of course, is critical in that process. So you want to make sure that there's true communication between those two teams, especially. And then we would involve our legal counsel when needed to help us escalate some items that we needed to. And so it was great collaboration. We met every week to go through our appeals. That group did. All righty, so Sarah, what methods do you employ for evaluating appeals?
So we use our appeals analysis report. And what that report allows us to do is see all of the appeal levels that we've completed, sort them by classification, by payer, and then it has one of my favorite columns in the whole system. We have our paid post-appeal column in our report that allows you to see how much you've collected on that appeal. So you can see the actual dollars that resulted after the appeal and not just the total dollars collected on the claim. Sometimes you're appealing the whole claim because everything denied. Sometimes you're appealing pieces of it. And you really want to know what you collected. Was that appeal successful? Did it result in cash? And so then we can take that report and break it down further again to see where we're collecting the most, where we're collecting the least, and make decisions off of that. If we're not successful with a certain appeal, is it because it is Medicaid and they will never overturn a prior auth denial? Or is it something where you need better documentation, where you need to take it to a peer-to-peer review, where you need to escalate it to the ALJ? Mm-hmm. Are there other steps you can take to try to get that appeal paid? Or again, is it something we need to set aside and say, okay, this is not successful, so we're not going to continue to take time and effort to work on a Medicaid prior auth appeal? Some states you can get them, but most of them you can't. And use our time to go after the things where we're going to get cash. We also use that report. We try to be really proactive in thinking ahead of what we want to track on those appeals. Is it just that I want to know what my Blue Cross Blue Shield medical necessity appeals look like? Or am I trying different types of packages? Am I sending different records or different information on different appeals? And so then we flag those in our system to make sure at the time that we're submitting the appeal that we have it flagged in a way that we can track it later. A lot of times in the past, you send out a bunch of appeals, and then 6 months later, a year later, you're trying to remember which one had which information in it, go back through the records to find it. So we really try to be proactive in flagging those, identifying those. This is a test appeal for adding this piece of information or sending it this direction rather than that direction. And then we also look to make sure that we are getting medical records that truly support that appeal. Mm-hmm. A lot of times payers come back and say, we need records, you need to appeal with records. We grab them from the client, we ship them off to the payer, and it gets denied in the end anyways. If you go back and you look at those records, do they really have documented in there what needs to be in there to support that payer policy? Not every doctor is documenting everything based on what Humana wants or based on what Blue Cross wants. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's education back to the clients, or at the very least being strategic in which ones we submit and which ones we don't. You submit enough bad records, and then you find yourself in a prepayment appeal or a prepayment review. You find yourself in more audits because the payer sees that you're running testing based on orders and records that don't support their policies. So they're going to question that, and they're going to push back. So we start with our analytics, with our appeal analytics of how the outcomes of our paid appeals, our closed appeals, look at that paid post-appeal, and then use that to move forward to see what can we change to collect more or to focus our team more on the payable appeals.
And then costs, loading costs in
yes.
the system. Making
yep.
sure that you're always evaluating against your cost. So paid post-appeal is a key metric to track, obviously, to make sure that you're being effective with that appeal process. But one of the things that I love that Sarah said was to plan ahead of what you want to track. So always think about what is it that I'm looking for in the end, and that's the metric that we want to keep track of and know right up front. All righty. Identify key metrics for new labs to maximize reimbursement. This is our next learning objective. Tracking essential metrics from the start is crucial for new labs to optimize reimbursement and ensure financial success. There are so many things to consider when starting a new lab. But these metrics right here provide insights into coding accuracy, claim submission timeliness, and compliance with payer contracts. And these things should be tracked from the get-go when you're a brand new lab. So when you're looking at metrics for coding accuracy, you want to make sure to track the percentage of claim denials attributed to coding errors. And then, of course, identify common coding mistakes and implement corrective actions to improve accuracy right away. Metrics for claim submission timeliness. Timely filing rate. Measure the percentage of claims submitted within the payer-specific filing deadlines. And those deadlines vary by payer. You've got 90, 180, 365. So you want to make sure you have a system that supports those payer timelines and then alerts the team that's working on the front end so they know when they're starting to get close to that deadline, they've got to get those claims pushed through the system, right? All right, claim rejection rate. Track the rate of claim rejections due to late submissions or missing information. And then you want to implement processes to address those submission errors and improve timeliness. Metrics for payer contract compliance. As a new lab, you want to make sure you have a system that supports loading your contracted or expected reimbursement rates so you can easily identify whether your payers are adhering to the reimbursement requirements outlined in your contract with them. And if you're not contracted with a lot of payers, consider loading the clinical laboratory fee schedule or the MPFS into your system so at least you have a baseline to monitor. And another option is load your ASP. It's interesting how many times we work with laboratories and they'll say, well, we're not contracted and we don't know what we need to load. Well, your financial office has an ASP. And they're always measuring that baseline to say, did we get at least our ASP, right? And if we didn't, go after those payers. So there's always something to load in the system to do a comparison to make sure that you really are getting what you need to be getting out of that test. All right. Okay. And then Sarah. I know these items are easily tracked in the Telcor system. So what are some of the things that you recommend tracking right out of the gate for new laboratories?
So one of the things we look at with our customers, and it's the first one up there on the left, and it's one of my favorites because it's fairly concrete, which is hard to say in lab and payer reimbursement. And that's that we look at our allowed versus paid. So this is just looking at claims where your payer processed the claim and they sent you an allowed amount. That's the payer saying you are eligible for this amount of money. Sometimes it goes to patient responsibility, but that's a small amount. And we look at the allowed versus paid as a way of saying we should be collecting at a minimum on an average day where no one's doing anything special. We should be collecting that allowed amount. Almost to 100% of it, not always because of patient responsibility, but we've got percentages that we aim at by payer to say this is the percentage of the allowed amount that we should be collecting. Mm-hmm. Just by having a system that's working well, the team that's getting eligibility and getting it to the right payer and those sorts of things, that allowed amount is collectible. The payer is telling you that that's what they allow for that test. So that's not something that's not on their fee schedule. It's not something that they've fully denied outright. So the first thing we track is our allowed versus paid on a new lab to make sure we've got the system set up right, we've got the edits in place that we need, and that the team is working things correctly. Once we've hit that, then we can dig in more, get into those appeals analysis, get into the touch rates, get into the advice analysis to figure out the denials. But that's my baseline. That's my minimum of I know I can get that allowed amount. We also look then at our CPT volumes, our test volumes, making sure that we've got a steady flow of charges through the system, that we're matching back to the lab, that everything's going out that needs to be out there. And then our expected reimbursement, as Darla was just saying, we want to have something in the system that we can compare to so that we know we're making the minimum. If you've got contracts, we're going to hold those payers to those contracts. We're able to load those expected reimbursements into the system, track them. We've got a special work queue that kicks them out if they're missing that expected reimbursement by a certain amount. And then we're taking that to the appeals process if it's a claim-by-claim issue. Or we're taking it back to the payer as a project to say, hey, you're underpaying all of these tests by $2. But when you add up those $2 across the month, all of a sudden it's $1,000, it's $20,000, it's $100,000 because of the volume. So we watch for those things to say, where are we not getting paid? Again, kind of setting that baseline of, am I getting what I am supposed to with my allowed amount, with my expected reimbursement, to make sure that I am on solid footing as then you move forward as a new lab and work through those additional denials and things like that.
Yeah, and I'm glad Sarah brought up the $2 example because I worked with a toxicology lab, very, very high volume laboratory on the East Coast, and they were being underpaid $1 on every one of their claims for a payer. And in the end, it ended up being a lot of money that they were able to go back to that payer and collect. Prior to Telcor, they didn't know that they were even losing that money. It's easy to identify in the system, so mm-hmm. Thanks for pointing that one out. Alrighty. So, of course, we heard allowed versus paid was the big metric for new labs to track, as well as existing, right? But new labs. Okay, next one, discover opportunities for additional reimbursement in existing labs. There are various strategies for existing labs that you can explore to identify and capitalize on opportunities for additional reimbursement. We talked about coding with new labs. Similar story for existing labs. You'll want to conduct a thorough review of your coding practices to identify potential undercoding or missed revenue opportunities. Payer requirements are constantly changing, and a coding review will help uncover some of those changes. It's also good to revisit your documentation practices. Sarah talked a little bit about this as well. Make sure the documentation you are receiving supports medical necessity. And of course, existing labs should be analyzing your payer reimbursement patterns, trends, and policies. You're looking for opportunities for negotiating higher reimbursement rates with your payers or addressing those underpaid claims. And then use this information to negotiate with your payers or go through the contracting process with your payers if you're out of network. You always want to be engaging in proactive negotiations with payers and securing favorable reimbursement rates. That should be a continuous focus, right? It's critically important to, when you're negotiating with your payers, to constantly remind them of the value of your services. We've heard this multiple times during this session, right? Everybody's talking about make sure you say value. This is what our tests are providing. This is why what we do is important to that patient's care. Okay? Every time that you're talking to a payer. And one of the things that I usually recommend with our customers when we're working with them through the implementation process is even think about the downstream effects. So I have somebody that's calling in and verifying the status of a claim. They should have something that is it's a little phrase that they can say to that payer about why reimbursement is important. So give them a little blurb that they can use every time they're talking to a payer. Okay. Payer AR, on a regular basis, you want to make sure you have a robust appeals process in place to challenge claim denials and underpayments. Remember, we're looking for money, so this is existing labs, things to look for. And to me, this is an important one. Implement technology that streamlines revenue cycle processes to minimize revenue leakage and improve cash flow. Make sure you're keeping your billing software updated and you're using a system like Telcor RCM that supports automation. You want to make sure you're using a system that reduces errors and optimizes reimbursement throughout the entire revenue cycle. So, Ms. Sarah, how do you help Telcor customers maximize their reimbursement?
Sure. So there's a couple different things we look at. I promise I'll give you one key metric at the end. Client and ordering provider analytics. So all of our denials reports, all of our payment reports also include the ordering provider, the client, so that we can look back and see who isn't sending us good demographics, who isn't sending us the right payer information, who is constantly sending the wrong diagnosis code that doesn't support the test, or never sends us medical records, so that we can work with those clients, and it can be a very sensitive thing, but, you know, is it a client that you can bill back to and say, okay, if you're not going to give me the right information so that I can get paid on this, I'm going to bill you instead. That would be the most beautiful world to live in. Not always the case, but make them responsible for that. Or is it education that you can reach out to them and explain, you know, hey, you're ordering this way. If you can order this way, it will now process and pay. Or is it something where if it's bad enough, if their payer mix, if their ordering, if their documentation is bad enough, are they a client you need to let go of? Mm-hmm. At some point, if that client is consistently sending you things that don't get paid, they are not a good client. They are not they're not increasing your business. They're not helping you out. And so at some point, you may have to let them go. But that allows you to see where some of those errors are originating from and make decisions on what steps you want to take next. Profitability metrics are also great. This is probably the one key metric. So we are able to load our customers' costs into the application and run reporting that shows those costs bumped up against their actual reimbursements. So I know a lot of times when you're dealing with clients, when you're dealing with payers, you're modeling out what that profitability is going to look like, trying to make sure you've got the right prices set to make a profit and keep the doors open. It can look very different once you're actually billing payers, once that client is actually sending you orders. They may promise you a payer mix of Blue Cross and Medicare, and it turns out it's all managed care Medicaid. And so being able to take your costs and bump them up against your actual volumes and your actual reimbursement allows you to see where you truly are making money, where you're losing money.
I'm gonna jump in here. It's very interesting, though, in working with customers that do have their costs loaded, and they look at those, and they're saying, but this client gives us so much volume, but you're losing so much money. Right? So it's right there in their face. They realize, okay, yeah, maybe it is time to let that client go. Because if they go to another lab, they're going to probably continue the same process, right? That lab's going to boot them out the door. So profitability.
Yeah. And you can look at it by client. You can also look at it by payer or by procedure. So if you've got tests that you think are making you the most, or you've got some loss leaders, you're trying to figure out how to balance your testing, maybe there's a test that you can market, that you can get out there, that you can target customers that are going to want to order that test, and it's one that you're making a lot of good money off of. Use that information. Send your marketing team, your sales team out to get those customers so that you can increase that profit. And then productivity reporting, which is part of another one of the metrics we talk about, but just remembering what your team is doing and how much that cost of employing a full-time employee balanced against the dollars that are coming in. You know, a lot of times we try to tie out to a person, what claims did they touch, what did they do, and how did that turn into cash? That can be really tricky because the claim gets touched a lot of times by a lot of different people sometimes. But looking at your overall staffing and your overall income to say, what am I making per FTE, and am I able to cover those costs based on the volumes that they're able to work? But profitability metrics that you can run against your actual reimbursements can be really, really powerful.
So that's your one key
yes.
metric. Perfect. All righty. So this is a great lead into our next section, which is productivity reporting. It provides valuable insights for assessing and optimizing operational costs and profitability. Gives insights into workforce performance as well as resource utilization. In terms of cost management, profitability reports track labor costs and help identify areas for optimization, ensuring efficient resource allocation. They also assess utilization, spotting opportunities to improve efficiency and reduce waste. On the profitability side, enhancing productivity often means increased output, which can drive revenue growth. Productivity reporting identifies high-performing employees or teams contributing significantly to your revenue generation. They also help pinpoint areas for inefficiency, where maybe we have to target reduction in specific areas, right? So key metrics like output per employee, which you talked mm-hmm. about, and efficiency ratios are crucial for gauging productivity levels. Data-driven decisions based on productivity insights help in identifying training needs, performance improvement opportunities, and resource allocation adjustments. So, Sarah, what types of productivity reporting does Telcor Revenue Cycle use?
Sure. So our system, like I'm sure many of yours do, our system tracks the history of a transaction, the history of an account. Who's looked at it? Who's touched it? What they did? Did they add an attention level to flag a claim to be worked, or did they post a payment? What did they do? So we use those history events in our profitability or productivity reporting to track what each team member is doing. And at the point that we're at now, we've got a pretty succinct list of activities that we expect from our team and that we can track to see how many claims they're touching, how many claims they're working. So we've got that profitability. I'm going to keep saying the wrong P word.
I know. I said P. I said profitability, too, so my apologies.
Productivity reports set up that show us how many claims a team member touches in a day on the claims follow-up side. We've got folks that are working eligibility or linking documents or doing other steps in the system, and we track those, and we know what their volume should be. To get there, we had to spend some time looking at our teams. What are they doing? Who do I know are my high performers, and what does their day look like? Who's a newer employee, and what does their day look like? Mm-hmm. And from that, we have been able to set some, we call them our minimum and our median. So a new employee that's been on the job for a couple months, they should be hitting their minimum. And if you're not hitting your minimum, especially if you've been around for a while, something's going on. We're going to have a talk, figure out what's going on and what we need to do. But we expect our staff, once they're fully trained and up and running, to be hitting that median. So it's a higher number, and that's where we really expect you to hit day over day. And so we'll look at the average over the course of a week or a course of a month. Everybody's going to have an up day and a down day. But over the course of a month, are you hitting that average median productivity? Because that shows me you're really doing what you're supposed to. You're really getting your work done. If you're falling below that, or if we're barely hitting the minimum on a daily basis, then that's where we have those conversations to figure out if there's a better fit for them, if inside of our company, outside of our company, and what we need to do to get them back on track. So for all of those different positions, we've got minimum and medium productivity to be able to help guide our team.
All right, so that was our final metric. And I do want to talk a little bit more about what Sarah was just going through. We actually have, as she said, everything in the Telcor RCM application is audited and tracked. So those events that she's talking about, I helped establish some of those baselines. And basically, I took a star performer, and I had them work in the system for 15 minutes, do exactly what you do for 15 minutes. And then when they were done with that time period, I went in and looked at all the events that they were doing and identified, these are the three things that I'm going to track based on that 15-minute increment. Then I had somebody else get in and do the same work, and I monitored them for 15 minutes. And I'm like, okay, got it, figured it out. So just know that there are ways that you can get down to how am I going to identify what that measure should be. Okay? All righty. So that concludes our session for RCM Business Intelligence, Maximizing Revenue and Efficiency. We have explored the critical role of revenue cycle management in healthcare operations and the importance of tracking key metrics to prevent revenue loss. Key takeaways include the necessity of staying informed about the changing reimbursement landscape and leveraging data-driven strategies for effective revenue cycle management. We encourage all executives to implement data-driven approaches in their organizations to optimize revenue and operational efficiency. By utilizing the right analytics and understanding key performance metrics, you can drive financial success and ensure sustainability in today's healthcare environment. If you haven't already done so, please stop by Strand 6 to meet with one of our solution consultants and view a demo of the TOCOR RCM system. Thank you for joining us. Sarah has one more comment.
I do. So the other thing I would encourage you to think about, too, with metrics and reporting, a lot of times we try to find the perfect metric, the clean metric, the thing that has no variables in it whatsoever. But that's not possible in medical billing. There's always going to be a certain amount of fluff in every metric you look at. So long as you have the same fluff in it every time you look at it, you've still got good numbers that you can use and that you can track the up, the down, the average, even productivity. We've got some tasks that the team can do in mass, in bulk. And so that's where some days they're going to take 100 claims and be able to make a note of them and resubmit them to the payer at once. Well, that's a great productivity day, and they just did it in 5 minutes. So there's always going to be variation in there, whether it's the productivity metrics, whether it's the cost, whether it's the claim metrics or the appeals analysis. But if you can keep a steady metric, mm-hmm. you're using the same parameters every time, it's going to set that baseline, and it's going to allow you to use those metrics to make decisions. So don't worry about being perfect, because it doesn't happen in billing.
All right, what questions do we have from the audience? I know that you have your app, but if we'll take questions.
So you're asking, I'm going to repeat the question so everybody can hear. You're looking for something that would help at the time of collection for the ordering, basically for the ordering provider to be able to make sure they've got the medical necessity to order the test.
Similar to how like the government has for the OCDs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we have some of those rules in our billing system, and they're all configurable. So we load the NCDs, we load the LCDs, and we load those payer-specific policies. Unfortunately, that's in the billing system, so it's by the time it gets to the lab. Mm-hmm. I don't know, has anybody else heard of medical necessity checking at the point of order?
Well,
yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm. They integrate it into their client's portal. So, mm-hmm. order, they fill that out. That's integration with
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a lot of automation in the system, though. When we do receive an invalid diagnosis code, you can generate a request immediately out to the client to ask them for an updated diagnosis before you've even generated the claim. So I know it's not helping you up front, but all right.
I'm going to pop in for a second. So she mentioned having a demo in Strand 6. So mm-hmm. at 9:30, if you're interested in seeing the system, Darla and Sarah and Kurt will be down in Strand 6. To kind of give it mm-hmm. over you, like a 20-minute quick demo, and then there's also one scheduled for 12:45. If those times don't work for you, I would say reach out to any of the Telcor team, and mm-hmm. you can either pop in the room if it's available or set up another time to do a demo. But they'll be down there at 9:30 to walk through anything if you guys want to see it and ask more questions.
Then I can show you all my pretty reports in person.
All righty. Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of the conference.
Thanks.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.